Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case. Hello, I'm Linda. Welcome back to another episode of Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. Today, I'm joined by Stephanie, Teresa, Pat, and Heather.
Hello.
Hi.
Nicole hasn't returned yet from her holiday break, but she'll join us briefly through a previously recorded interview. This week on Write Club, Stephanie will be reading to us from her work in progress, after which we will offer her our comments, just as we do in the Write Club meetings. Pat will return as grammar police. She's wearing her helmet. We'll talk about effective critiquing. It's so important if you're involved with other writers, where you give and receive constructive criticism. And we're going to hear what Heather and Lucy Honey are reading at the moment. Lucy is one of our listeners. Hi, Lucy. First, I want to tell you about a very special announcement. As you may remember, last New Year's, our Teresa entered a contest called Just Back that's run by the Telegraph, a UK newspaper, and she won. She won £250, and with that, she bought a glockenspiel and said she would buy cashmere knickers. We haven't asked where they are.
They're still on order.
Champagne and absinthe, the drink of the Paris left bank. Well, she's done it again this year.
Yay!
New Year's tradition has begun. This year, she wrote another story for Just Back, and she won another £250. Teresa, what did you write about?
It was just about a couple of days that I spent in Dublin with my daughter, and I just loved the atmosphere of the damp, miserably, you know. But it was lovely. It was lovely, and the pubs, and yeah. So I just wrote about that, and I was very surprised to win again, but
it looked like you just dashed it off. That's the way it read, like it just this wonderful.
Well,
just
I didn't spend a lot of time on it. I don't want to appear immodest, but I really didn't think it was anything special. But hey, they probably don't get a lot of entries over the holiday period. Who knows? But it has inspired some of our listeners. I know, you know, who are going to have a go. I know Frank Carver's having a go, okay. And maybe Alison Robertson's, and surely all of you guys can do 500 words on a topic of travel. Yeah, so do have a go.
What if I could just be just back from chaos or something, where I live these days?
Yeah, that would be, you'd have to enter that in a fiction
Do we have a list of things to buy this year with our
$250? No. It's already spent. I've got so much already planned this year. I'm going to Ireland again in July, uh-huh. And I'm going to Bratislava in May, I'll be doing something for my daughter's birthday later in the year. So I've got quite a lot of travel planned. So I could do with another 500, 750.
So we can look forward to a piece on Bratislava.
Obviously, I'm going to have a go. I might need to use a pen name. I don't know how many times you're allowed to win in a given year. But,
Well done, you.
That's terrific. Okay, and now Teresa is going to ask us
name the novel.
Yep, and it'll be interesting to see who gets this one. So, the eponymous heroine of this 1849 novel was given a boy's name. However, after the publication of the novel, it became a popular girl's name and is rarely, if ever, given to boys these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. What would that one be?
Sue? Not Jane.
I'm thinking of all
really?
The...
Yes, I'm thinking Vivian. Names rather than...
Yeah. Yeah. Shirley,
Vivian.
Hillary, Vivian. Mm. Yeah, Vivian's good one.
Well, shall I give you another clue?
Yes.
I will say I've already heard the name around this table, so that's quite good. And, you know, some people listening will have got it. The author was a member of the most famous literary family. Two of her siblings died during the writing of this novel, leaving the author alone with her elderly father.
Got it, I think.
Ooh, good. Yeah. Okay. And the third clue, the novel is set in Yorkshire in 1811-12, the era of the Napoleonic Wars and the Luddite Rebellions, and it concerns machine breakers. It's the author's only historical novel.
I think I've got it.
Tell us, tell us.
Villette?
Not Villette.
Oh.
You're in the right area. You've got the right author.
Yeah.
Bronte, one of the Brontes.
It is one of the Brontes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just that I don't know all the Bronte novels.
Yeah. Villette was actually set in the fictionalised Brussels. So Villette stands for Brussels.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Based on her experience working in a school in Brussels.
Beverly.
Not Beverly. Go through all the names you said before.
Vivian, Hillary, Kimberly, Shirley.
Shirley!
Shirley, of course.
Okay. I'm sure lots of our listeners will know it well and will have got it. So, yeah, Shirley was not a girl's name.
It was given to
the heroine of the novel, who has some masculine qualities, such as she's a landowner, she's independent, she refuses to marry according to her family's wishes.
Charlotte or Emily?
Charlotte Bronte, the second of her novels. So Villette came later.
Well, thank you, Teresa. That was very interesting.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. So, as I promised, we're going to listen to Stephanie read from her current work, and then we're going to offer her some comments. So, Stephanie.
Right.
Ready?
Okay, yes. I'll just kick straight off and I'll wait to see what you've got to say about it. 55! Jane pretended not to see him glance at her as she stretched up to pull the numbered ticket from its dispenser. She feigned surprise and relief when a hand reached out to pass her ticket down to her. Why, thank you, she gushed. The young man shrugged and turned away, muttering that she was welcome. Jane noted the way he bounced on the balls of his feet when he walked. The silver-grey padded jacket and the blonde hair above would make him easy to find again. The small screen above the delicatessen counter flickered. A young woman waved her arm above her head in response to the call of 56. Her other hand stroked the shoulder of a child who lolled in the seat of a shopping trolley cushioned by a large red handbag to one side. Jane grabbed the propelling rims of her chair and with a swift downward push moved closer to them. Jane's eyes were level with the little girl who clamped an indeterminate soft toy between her chin and the handlebar of the trolley. "What's your name?" asked Jane. The child's eyes studied her, the lashes wet and darkened from recent tears. "I'm Jane," she continued and held the child's gaze. The mother leaned across to place a lumpen object wrapped in white film on top of the pile of groceries behind her daughter. Jane winked with a tiny nod of her head towards the little girl. "She's tired," explained the mother with a hint of apology in her voice. "Almost tea time. Been a long day." Then she stroked the top of the silken head and said, "Aren't you going to tell the nice lady your name, Bella?" "Bella, what a beautiful name," exclaimed Jane. Bella's mouth twitched. "And who is this?" Jane tugged a dangling limb of the toy. Bella lifted her head and wrapped her arms around the creature. "Bunny," she said, "my bunny." Bella's mum shifted the trolley to allow herself to step between it and the counter to accept another package from the assistant. "And about 100 grams of the marinated artichokes, please." It was easy after that. Bella didn't ask about Jane's wheelchair like older children did. She seemed content to accept compliments about Bunny and her own pretty hair. When Jane steered the conversation to jelly babies and chocolate buttons and which she favoured, Bella clapped her hands. "Both," she declared. 57. Jane saw an assistant scuttle to the other end of the counter where the bacon and sausages were displayed. The young man in the padded jacket prodded his finger towards the glass. 58. "Say goodbye, Bella." The mother took her place at the steering end of the trolley and looked down at Jane. "Thank you." 58. "It was my pleasure. She's delightful." Jane allowed herself a smile as the silly woman gave a shudder of pride and turned her watery eyes to her brat. "Nearly finished, Bella." "Bye-bye, Bella." Jane blew a kiss and then another as the child receded into the melee of the bakery aisle. Then she jammed the ticket, numbered 58, into her pocket and waited, eyes fixed on the silver-jacketed youth.
Ooh.
I loved the way that you use some sort of really good details to kind of create authentic setting. I particularly liked the guy prodding the glass.
Yeah.
The guy with the padded jacket prodded his finger towards the glass, because that's exactly what you do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
sort of go, that one there.
Yeah. yes.
And the way Bella, when she sort of took at the soft toy and she wrapped her arms around the creature, because they do, that's exactly what kids do, isn't it? They just
it's
do.
Very well observed.
Yeah, yeah, it was just so well observed and so authentic. But I loved the way you just used odd words to create and change the situation. So at the beginning, and at first, you're wondering why, like feigned surprise, why?
Yes, yes. Why but feigned? Right from that first sentence, you think, well, there's something dodgy going on here. She's not, you know, being entirely honest or straightforward.
And then, of course, that paragraph at the end where we get the silly woman and the watery eyes and the brat. Mm-hmm. It was just like...
Yes. Oh, it's quite harsh, isn't it? And then you think she's
that's
a very
when you
cold
know.
Person.
Yeah,
she's
this is all an act, and for some reason.
Yeah.
It's because the first bit I thought it was going to be the bloke that was the baddie.
Mm. Yeah.
I thought there was going to be something dodgy about him. So.
Yeah. I also liked the notice that you gave to things that really gave a sense of place and character to it, like the baby's eyes were, the lashes were wet. Mm. Were dark and wet from recent crying. That's such a good observation.
Yes,
and I know the cushioning, the cart with the red handbag next to it. Mm-hmm. I always I do that now for my eggs. Used to do it for my child. But these things are so true. They're things that everybody, I think, can really relate to.
And what you've shopping. Done is you've taken a very commonplace, everyday scene, mm-hmm. but injected this very sinister element into it. Mm. And the phrase at the end where she's the silly woman and the brat, and you see that she has this contempt for other people. And it right from the start, you're thinking, what's going on? What's she up to? And then you think, when she's asking the child about what sweets it likes best, and you think, oh, that's very sinister. What's, what is he going to do to this child?
Yeah.
But then she's very focused on the guy in the jacket. And what is she going to do to him? What has she got in mind? It's really, really intriguing.
Good. And because you start that early on, his jacket and the blonde head would make him easy to find again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And leaves you wondering, well, why does she need to find him again?
Yeah.
And why has she hidden the ticket and not gone to the counter for her cheese or whatever,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
I must admit, I was a bit confused at the beginning with the 55, and then she gets a ticket. So I think, right, is she 56? And then I found myself, past my brain while I'm reading, was thinking about
the 55.
Why wasn't she saying, I'm here, and then you get all these other people. Mm. That was a bit confusing. And the fact that it took a while to realise that, why can't she reach? Is she a child?
I just thought she was very small. I just thought she was very small, and then you realise she's in a wheelchair.
One real awkward phrase I thought was that the propelling rims of the wheels of her chair just felt very awkward.
I had to Google how wheelchairs work and what they call those things.
The
they
rims
do call
around.
Them
yeah.
rims.
Well, yeah.
Maybe just rims or just
or
the wheels.
Would do it.
Maybe. I'd need to talk to somebody in a wheelchair.
Is this literally in progress, or is there an ending?
No, there is. I have an idea about writing about a group of women who live together, all of whom have a fairly dark secret.
So she's...
This will be one of the women, and I'm really just working on my characters at the moment. You remember the last thing I did, I read to you about a woman who spotted another woman in the street. I'm just trying to find my characters.
Let's see, one of the other characters I think we've heard about before works in a funeral home. Is that part of the same group?
Yeah, that's part of the same group.
Ooh.
I'm glad that you had a sense of sinister, a sense of menace, because that's what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. But in a very benign setting. So I'm very glad that worked. I'll take on board the awkwardness and and not quite understanding that she's in a wheelchair. I'm not sure how I'm going to get around that, but I'll play with it.
I think that's okay. But,
well, I thought it was okay. Yeah. I didn't realise she was at first, but it was okay when it was introduced. Yes.
You think, oh, why can't you reach it?
It didn't go on too long.
Yeah. Can I tell you about a couple of words that snagged me a little bit?
Please. Yes, okay. Please do.
So when the young man hands her the ticket and you say, why thank you, she gushed. Gushed struck me as perhaps a little too strong. Maybe you're showing her as an actor as a phony too early. That was just my theory. And maybe she could just smile up at him or something. The child has an indeterminate soft toy. That struck me as a bit strange. Unidentifiable or something. I know what you're trying to say, that you can't see what animal it's meant to be. But it's snagged.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure whether she was winking at the child or the mother. But it sort of, I said, now I know she's dodgy. My mother always warned me not to trust people who wink. So, yeah, you've given it all away there. You've given it all away there to me, anyway.
Okay, that's brilliant.
What a beautiful name, exclaimed Jane. Exclaimed just seemed a bit overdone. I don't know, it's only my opinion.
No, that's fine.
Most of my comments are positive, like, you know, when you say it was easy after that, I'm like, what the heck is she up to? What is going on? I didn't like Shudder of Pride.
I didn't really like Shudder.
I couldn't visualise that. I couldn't visualise that at all. And Melee as well didn't kind of work for me. It snagged me a little bit as a word. But, you know, I understand what you're saying, that it was busy in that aisle. But those were just a few words that snagged me.
Okay, thank you. That's useful.
And, yeah, so I think some of the word choices are not as subtle as they could be, but it was just a fantastically compelling. You just think, what is going on? Right, I want the next episode, please.
Write some more.
But I thought the words like gushed and exclaimed, especially exclaimed, because we do that with young children. Oh, what a beautiful name! You know, we're a little over the top dramatic about talking with them.
Sometimes. Yeah, it's one of those things. You know, if you think it's fine, so probably it is. But just didn't work for me. But
okay, I was suspicious of her because she was kind of overly nice, and she was making such a point of talking to this child and. I did feel an early sense of menace there with the gushing and stuff. I also loved the bouncing on the balls of his feet.
Yeah, you can see that. You can visualize that.
Yeah, and would make him easy to find again. And now I'm really wondering, why does she want to find that man again?
I know. I'm worried for him. I'm very worried for him. Yes. I don't know what she's up to.
I find it very interesting that wheelchair users are sometimes ignored by other people. And I had a friend who spent many months in a wheelchair, and she told some hysterically funny stories. It was either that she was ignored and treated as if she was, you know, had no brain, or she was treated as if she was some sort of saint, which was the story that came to me when I was thinking about this, because she was great. I mean, she was no saint. Mm-hmm. She was great fun. But she said, you know, if you gave somebody the finger from your wheelchair, it really, really shocked them. So there's a bit of inspiration from there.
So you're getting away from the stereotype.
Well, Stephanie, I've never before thought of you as being sinister and menacing, but now I have to look again.
That's why we write, so we can let all this bad stuff out.
That was very well done.
Thank you. Thanks for your feedback.
And now, how about going to the grammar police here? Let's see. Pat's got her baton out and she's going
to... We call it a truncheon.
A truncheon.
And that we should put it away.
Actually, we call it, I think it's called a billy club.
Billy club. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, well, please put it down.
Well, let's try and impose a little order on this unruly mob. Yeah, this came to me when I was actually looking at preparing for the session today, and it said effective critiquing. I thought, oh, yes, effective. One of those things that people tend to have problems with. So I thought, why not just have a little trot through the meaning? Because it is easy to make the mistake. The main difference, apart from the spelling, affect with an A and effect with an E, is that affect is mainly used as a verb. That's a doing word. It denotes action.
And it means to influence or make a difference to. Quite simply that. So a couple of examples. The closure of the factory will affect hundreds of people. So it will influence, it will have a, it will make a difference to hundreds of people. Is that clear?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or the poor climate began to affect his health.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Again, it would make a difference to his health. That is the easiest way, I think. If you can substitute make a difference to, then right. It will nearly always be affect. Effect can be both a noun and a verb, but it's mainly used as a noun. It's only used as a verb in very limited occasions. It means a result or influence. So, for instance, a healthy diet can have a beneficial effect. It is a beneficial effect. It's a noun.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm with you.
It can't make
this
the difference.
This is the problem, because they're similar in meaning.
Yes. Yeah. And the effect creates an effect.
Yes.
So, for instance, the poor climate began to affect his health. So
the effect
of the climate.
Poor climate. Yes. Was
poor health.
Was poor health to was deterioration in his health.
Yeah.
Right.
That's where it gets quite confusing.
Oh,
so you really have to know about verbs and nouns.
Yes.
And whether you're talking action.
So nouns are names and verbs are doing words.
Correct. Yeah, forget all the high-flown language. That's basically what you're talking about. She tried various colours till she got the effect she wanted. Right?
Yes.
So the result that she wanted. So if you substitute result, then...
So the result of the poor weather was a deterioration in his health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the poor weather affected his health because the...
Made a difference to
his health.
Or brought about a difference.
Right. It's all clear as mud to me. I don't know what to think. Now, I've always thought of affect also as being an emotional kind of
affect thing. As opposed to intellect.
Yes.
The realm of feeling.
Yes.
Affective.
I was coming to that. Affect as a verb does have another meaning, but it's not as usual. And that means to feign an appearance. In short, to pretend. Yes. So he affects a convincing grumpy old man persona, but he's really a sweetie. So when you put something on, you affect.
You would that's something that's more common in Victorian novels, isn't it?
Yeah. 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 But it can also be used as a noun, but apparently that's principally in psychology treatises and things like that.
Would you read it again? He affects
a convincing grumpy old man persona. So he puts on this particular persona.
Which makes you hate him. The effect is
the effect of his grumpy old man persona.
Nobody asks him out.
There is another step.
Go on, please.
There is another one where effect, I said, can also be used as a verb, but in limited occasions. And there, it means to bring about or to cause. So it's very often used with change. To effect a change.
To effect a change.
To bring about a change.
Yes, to bring about a change.
To cause change to happen.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Pat. It's a tricky area, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Pat. And now let's move on to some other very important writerly work, that of offering helpful, constructive, well-thought-out criticism to others who are also writing. So, Stephanie, you have some things to say about this, I know.
Yeah, I really value having critique of my work. But I did read something quite amusing. I found something online that says, your job as a critiquer is not to crush a fragile ego, but to help people improve. But if you don't want to be told where you could improve, if you only want praise, don't ask for critique. Get your mum to read your work. And I think that's very true, that there are people who simply don't want to be told. But as a critiquer, you do have to be mindful that you don't want to completely destroy people. I really value quite brutal critique. I suppose there's always that little voice in you when somebody mm-hmm. says, oh, that's really good. You think, no, they're just saying that.
Yeah.
So I do, and I do think it's helpful to have direction on how to do it. And I've been on several courses where we've been asked to critique one another's work, and certainly within our writing group we critique, and I know at the very beginning mm-hmm. we came up with kind of rules for critiquing.
Yes, we did. We gave rules for how to be critiqued.
Yes,
too.
Yeah,
which were important.
Yeah. So I've got a form here which is a sort of how to write 300 words of feedback, which helps. And the questions that you consider, first of all, is what is the writing trying to achieve? How successfully does it do it? And how could it be improved? So, you know, it's quite important to consider the readership and the genre. I think it's always important to say something positive about the piece because there's something positive about everything. If the author's stated what they're trying to do, and I think as an author, and when you're being critiqued, it's quite useful to say, I'd like to know if you're getting this, that, or the other sense from this piece of writing. And then things like, is it engaging? Does it leave you asking questions? You know, if somebody's writing for children, is it something that you feel comfortable children reading? And then if you're saying this didn't work or that didn't work, it's important to say I felt rather than, you know, you didn't.
Right.
You didn't
right.
make that clear.
Right.
Is harder to hear than I didn't really get that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's
a very simple rule of thumb with anybody. You know, you're taking the ownership upon yourself.
Right.
But, yeah, I think I would say critiquing other work is a useful skill to develop as a writer, because not only does it help you to build a supportive group of sympathetic readers, as you'll find within a writing group, but it's actually quite useful to get it back. And of course, it's lovely when people go, oh, that's really good and I really got that. But, you know, that's not going to sharpen your work, is it? If anybody ever says is, oh, that's really good, what you want is people to go, well, you could consider this or you could try that. So,
yeah, I mean, I really value honesty. And the first writing group that I belonged to, we didn't really have any idea what a writer's group should be. We just started it. And the stuff that I wrote now, I would say, was pretty poor. But we all sort of sat around and listened to each other's stories and went, oh, that's lovely. And then after a while, some of us thought, no, this isn't very good. This is not very helpful. We need to win, you know. So, yeah, it's not helpful. You've got to be honest, but in a kind way. That's the important thing. It's no use saying, well, this is rubbish. Right. Why have you sent me this? You know, you have to say, you know, so you find some good things to say. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, something positive like the idea is good or whatever. Yeah. But be honest, but in a kind way.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Steph said, one of the things is very important, not just in critiquing writing, but in life in general, stay away from you statements. Especially if you're having an argument with your husband, you did this. No, you say, I feel that you ran over my foot with the car on purpose. I believe that. It is my feeling that, not you did, because that really is inflaming.
But he did, though, didn't he?
He did. But it inflames any conversation, I think.
I'm learning so much from you guys.
When we talked about how to be critiqued, that's very important, too. One of the things that Steph mentioned earlier, I think, was if you really want directed criticism, you should tell the people who are critiquing you, what I want to know about this is, if that's what you'd like to do, or if you just want the full critique, then one of the things you need to do is to be quiet and listen. Don't interrupt while you're being critiqued. Keep a notebook, write down questions or comments, points that are made, and wait, save it all until everybody's finished, and then you will have the opportunity to address all of those issues and questions. But if you kind of interrupt and try to explain, oh, but what I meant by that was, or, oh, this person is supposed to be a, or, you know, don't defend anything. Because if this person is supposed to be a, hasn't come across in the writing, you need to know that. So don't try to explain it away. So I think that's an important thing to remember.
I think another thing is when you're, you know, if you're part of a book club and you have to do a critique of a book, I always think it's quite important formulate your ideas without reference to anybody else.
Yes.
And when you go onto these online situations where there are other critiques, don't read the other critiques first.
That's right.
Because they will bias you.
That's right, they will.
You know, that person will have spotted something that you haven't spotted, either good or bad.
Right.
And I think it's really important for the person that you're critiquing to say to them, as a reader, this was what I received.
Right. Yes, it's about that response and impact.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm always interested when you guys critique my work and we critique each other's, so that you have different interests and you come at it from a different angle and you pick up on different things. Mm-hmm. So it's quite. I think that's quite important not to be influenced by other people, to come to it fresh and open.
And that's why it's important, you know, when you're part of a writing group, that you do your homework.
Right.
And you do your critique before you get here. And then, you know, you don't kind of do it on the fly, making notes as you go.
Of course not.
We always do our homework. And we don't do it on the bus, as you don't do your homework on the bus.
Well, doing it on the bus is fine. It's doing it in class. That's not forgivable.
I know I sometimes veer into editing instead of critiquing. I'm really sort of conscious of that.
I value that.
I do too.
So please don't stop doing that.
Other people in other groups, I think you have to be aware that actually it's a different role, it's a different job. You might not want that. And it's like Linda said, you know, you need to be very clear about what it is you want from your critiques.
Yeah. But if somebody's misspelt something, that's always a difficult one. You know, did you not run the grammar check, the spell check over this before you submitted it? Or, I think you might have meant this word instead of that word, you know.
Well, because I'm American in a group full of Brits, I have recently stopped marking misspellings because they do it all the time according to American English. And so then I'm marking things that really are not misspelled in Britain. Yeah. They're just, they use a lot of use where we don't, et cetera. Yeah. But I,
sometimes,
and I'm also
essential.
There are times when, but there, I've also decided recently that I'm no longer going to mark punctuation problems and things like that, because these are things that later proofing or Pat will take care of.
That will probably pick
and
up.
So I figured that would be done by that way, and I want to concentrate more on actually the structure and the characterization, all of the other points.
Well, I like
instead.
To have everything critiqued, and if I need a comma and I haven't got one or a semicolon, then do tell me.
Well, I would like to tell you about a critique I once received many years ago from a rather illustrious author, Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, give over. No, you didn't.
I did. And he signed it with his famous little a-hole signature, the asterisk, you know. Oh, Stephanie's looking at me with her
mouth open.
But I think those things are rather important. Rather, maybe they're collector's items now. I don't know. But I'm keeping mine.
What did he say?
Well, here's what he said. I sent him a story based on, it was a group of Southerners sitting around waiting for one of their relatives to die. And and I just basically made the story, what I thought was a story, about all the conversations and things that were going on in this group of people while they're waiting for Uncle to die. And I thought it was really brilliant, good enough to send off to him. And the reason I sent it was because I attended a writer's conference recently where he had been a keynote speaker. And so I thought, oh, this is great. I'll send this.
We're best mates now. Right. I've heard him speak.
We have been in the same room. So, well,
my friend Kurt.
To my great joy and surprise, he responded. And he said, I think you have mistaken the I think you have mistaken the short story for the soap opera.
Oh, no!
He said, nothing happens here. Yeah. He said, you have people sitting around waiting for someone to die, and nothing happens. And he said, actually, a lot can happen while people are waiting for someone to die. Many things can happen, but you haven't noted them.
Nice of him to actually bother.
Yeah. And I thought it was a very good critique. He was absolutely right in a few words, but I thought it was brilliant that he really did answer.
And he read it,
and he thought it was awful.
And you didn't feel hurt.
No, I feel hurt. In fact, I went.
It was awful.
I was
Yay,
so happy.
Yay! Makes my work so awful.
Yeah, I went around with them to everyone. Look! I cut this letter. Yes. But it was a bright moment in my writing life to have Kurt Vonnegut trash my story. I loved his work. He was a wonderful writer, wonderful man.
Well, Linda gets a prize for name dropper.
Absolutely. Well, look, I went on to WikiHow and looked up on there. Anybody can do this, and we'll put the link on about how to critique. And it's quite a long article, so I'm just going to give you the 7 headlines about how to do it. But what WikiHow says is, number one, pay attention. Well, I think that's what we're talking about actually doing the homework. Number two, read the material. Again, I think that's important. Number three, think about the material. So read it, think about it, and consider. Prepare several observations about the piece. And it does go on to say that people will have specific points or questions to discuss. And it can be helpful to have some specific things to mention. It says, be nice, but don't be too nice. Mm-hmm. So it's something that people may take seriously, and careless comments such as this paragraph sucked or this character is annoying is rude and downheartening. But mm-hmm. rather than be too nice or too mean, be balanced. So if a character is boring or flat, and that's something you want to say, but say it in a way that the author knows you're speaking critically and not cruelly. So you could say, I really enjoyed the language you used to describe this, but a few paragraphs later, I felt we were being bogged down with too much description. So you're very specific about right. it. And finally, keep in mind that the end goal is for you all to become better writers.
Right.
And that, I know, is what we as a group have said right from the very beginning, that we're here to help each other be the best that we can be, mm-hmm. not to destroy each other.
Right.
Anyway, that's WikiHow, so there's an article online there people can use.
I found a couple of things. I found a site called Scribophile, which looked quite interesting. I hadn't come across it before. And found about 4 or 5 different articles or pieces on critiquing. Some of them giving general advice, like the stuff that Steph just mentioned, but 2 that I think are worth a note. One was The Diplomatic Critiquer by Andrew Burt, who apparently has his own group called Critters, which specialises in sci-fi and stuff. And he gives some useful advice on phrasing, particularly useful for online groups when you're critiquing strangers. So the stuff you said about find something nice to say, and even if you can't find anything nice, at least make your criticisms pleasantly, politely. And he actually gives specifics and don't say this and try this instead, which I thought, could be really useful for some people. Yes. And the other one I really liked was How to Critique Fiction by Victory Crane. She gives some general advice, but also some very detailed and useful checklists covering, plot, dialogue, point of view, show, not tell, characterization, etc. So for somebody just starting out and wanting a steer on how to do it, I think that would be a really useful one.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Whole books on it.
I found something on short stories versus novels, and it said, when critiquing a short story, remember that every word must count. Mm-hmm. Are there sentences and or paragraphs that don't appear to contribute substantially to the story and maybe should be thrown out? So if you're critiquing a short story, something that could be quite useful for your recipient is to say, actually, here's some extraneous words, because quite often you're trying to get under a word count, and if you can lose 20 words throughout the text, you've got the opportunity to put another really punchy descriptive line in or something like that.
Right.
Are there too many subplots? Because in short stories, one subplot may be okay, but 2 or more is often too much.
Yeah.
Did the author go overboard on flashbacks? Generally in short stories, flashbacks should be used very sparingly. So when you're critiquing a short story as opposed to a piece out of a novel, then think about, can they use 2 words? He was walking, he walked.
Yeah.
That you can save a word there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think particularly if you're doing flash fiction, or, this story that I did for the RAC had to be under 1,000 words. And I think I've mentioned before that the woman was dreaming of a pina colada, but I had to change it to margarita to get under the... And then I shaved a few few more words off. I put it back. I reinstated the pina colada because that was what I really wanted it to be. But yes, I had some very useful critiquing on that, where people said, well, that's, as you say, extraneous words. You don't need that. And help me to make it tighter.
One of the things you can do when you're counting words, I think it's useful to go through your find and replace thing and just find every very in the V-E-R-Y and remove them. I don't know if
or
very
really or just or
really
only,
just
all of those.
So there are so many of those little words that if you leave them out, they tighten the manuscript so much more. And yet, I'm always saying it was very important. It was very this or that. And so now I have to catch
myself
or go back.
Well, if you want, rather than say very important, maybe you could say it was imperative or it was
essential.
Of course, there are many other words. Use your thesaurus.
Yeah.
I have my thesaurus button right in the tray on my computer, right in the tray. So I click it all the time. If you have any comments about what we've said about critiquing, or if you can add something that we've left out, or if you think we should leave something out, please let us know. Go to our Facebook page and give us some feedback. We always love hearing from you.
So if you're not part of a writing group, and you haven't got people to offer you critique, what do you do?
Well, if you're not part of a group like this one or some other writing group where you get feedback from others, then you go online.
Yeah, I've looked at a few. In fact, I've tried to join four, so I'll just run through them with you. One I found was called Absolute Right Watercooler. Now, it doesn't seem to be a lot of critiquing. It's more about forum boards where you can discuss writing and writing techniques and things with other readers. And I signed up to it. It was a very easy sign-up and validation process. And I got my email back saying, yep, you're now a member. And then when I went onto the site, I got this message from my antivirus software that said, this site is not secure. So I'm afraid, Absolute Right Watercooler, I left immediately because I didn't really feel comfortable using it. So I can't really comment on the quality of what's there. I then went on to Agent Query Connect, which is it's a site that promises lots of discussion forums, critiquing, feedback, places to share your work and get feedback from the rest of the community. And again, a very easy sign-up process. Very quick coming back saying, yep, you're clear, you're on. But then when I went to log in, the capture that proves that you're not a robot isn't working. So you can't actually log on.
Oh.
So it promises a lot, but unfortunately it isn't delivering at the moment. So if anybody out there knows any, if is already a member of Agent Query Connect, please let the administrators know that new people can't get in, because it looks like a great site. And I know Keziah Frost found her agent through that site. So that was one of the reasons I really wanted to join it, but it, new people are just barred at the moment because of that. The next one I looked at was BookRicks. That was mainly chat forums, and it seemed to be a lot about self-publishing, and there was a lot of erotic fiction featured. But when I went into the forums to have a look, there seems to be a lot of spam from porn sites. So I abandoned BookRicks as well. So I wasn't having a lot of joy, if I'm honest.
You know, it takes time to find what sites are working.
Exactly. And I was literally going through a list that I found, so this, why they're in alphabetical order. Anyway, I then went on to CritiqueCircle.com. Now, this was established in 2003 and claims to be the longest established critique site in the world. And it was easy to register and log on. It is very US-centric, but that doesn't put me off, Linda.
Oh, good.
We've learned how to cope.
There are lots of forums. There's a very fresh, uncluttered look to the site. But when I looked at the latest posts, there aren't that many recent posts on there. There's a lot of very old posts, more than a year old. There are lots and lots of stories on there awaiting critique. And actually, one really good thing about this site is when you do start to critique, it offers you templates to critique. So
that's handy.
If you're a new critiquer, if you've never critiqued before, it takes you through the steps on how to write your critique. You can choose from a number of templates. So there's brand new to critiquing. Here's a lot of different templates you can use. and you can choose which template. And the third option is, I'm an experienced critiquer, I don't need your help, I'll just write an essay. So that was really, really useful. And the templates ask questions like, did the opening of this story hook you? Did you want to read more? So it's really specific stuff to help you through it. Is there dialogue in the story? Can you hear it? Mm-hmm. Is it believable? So I think it's a really, really great resource in that respect. I have critiqued one story on it. In terms of being critiqued, you have to critique three stories before your story goes into the story queue. But looking at the story queue, it's enormously long, and there are a lot of stories on there that have still not been critiqued. Mm. So I don't know. I mean, I have yet to pursue it, but I don't know how much traffic there is and how many people are critiquing. But certainly, CritiqueCircle.com, if you're looking for help on effective critiquing, I would recommend you take a look at that.
But you said there weren't many recent dates listed.
No, no. A lot of the posts on the forums are quite old.
Right.
But there are no dates on the stories that have been uploaded. But the story queue looks long. But if there are 10,000 people going on it every day, the story queue may not be that long.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. I need to use it to make a decision on that.
Right.
But certainly of the four that I tried, that was the one that I would say
is, and
these resources for how to critique, if nothing else, you'll learn how to critique if you go on to that. And it will give you a great head start on that. So CritiqueCircle.com, established in 2003.
Mm. I had a look at a couple of sites as well. I'll talk about the Reddit writers group first, because that at first I didn't really get it. It looked more like social media to me, where the people had posted photos and videos, and I didn't see what any of them had to do with writing specifically. But there are two subreddits. One is called Write and one is called Writing. And the first one, the Write one, is the one that was very much like social media. The Writing subreddit was similar, but it does allow you to post text for critiquing, but it didn't seem very focused or, you know, very tight. You would just post something and people could randomly comment on it. So more of a forum than a peer review site, I felt. So I didn't pursue that very far. I found it actually quite difficult to understand what was going on there. The other one I looked at is called The Next Big Writer. And this one is apparently used by a lot of professional writers. And it has been awarded the Best Writers Workshop 2017, which was awarded by the Critters, Predators and Editors Readers Poll. Now, this one you have to pay to join, so it is quite a serious group. It's $8.95 a month, $21.95 a quarter, or $69.95 a year. So if you're going to spend that money, you're going to commit to actually making use of the site, critiquing and being critiqued. But I signed up for the 7-day free trial. I found it very easy to use. I think I joined this 2 or 3 days ago, and I've had 2 reviews already for a story that I posted. There's a guided setup which is really useful, which explains the site, and how the groups work, so that it's organized around groups, but you can just join the main group and there are subgroups for specific genres. Now, interestingly, it has a points system, so you start with 7.5 points which you can spend posting your work. So, and then you earn points by reviewing. So I posted a short story and that cost me, bizarrely, 6.09 points. So immediately I've spent most of my points. Okay, but that's fine. And then when you do a review, you earn 0.6 for a review. So in other words, it costs you 10 times as much to post a story approximately as you earn from a review, which means you must review more than you post. A good feature they have is inline editing, which is kind of what I'm used to on a word processor, where you can highlight a phrase and comment on it. So that was very good. But you choose to do a normal review or an inline review. And I chose to do an inline review. When you post your story or text, it has something called Cover Creator. So you can upload an image and create a cover. Just for fun, I suppose. Yeah. But it's all very professional, very easy to use. You can choose which groups of people can see your work, how visible it is. And as you post work, you create a portfolio. Now, looking at the stuff that it's offering for review, some people are offering chapter 23 of their novel or chapter 17. So presumably they're testing all their chapters there. It also has an ebook generator, so you can post your text up there and immediately generate an ebook. And they have several published authors using their site, and some of them have presumably gone straight from there to create an ebook. I did think it was a good site, but one of the things that I would have liked was when you do a critique, if they say, what do you think of the structure? What do you think of the characters? Mm-hmm. What do you think of the descriptive writing? You know, some guidelines for that, because sometimes you forget, you know, but there wasn't anything like that. It's assumed you know what you're doing. But so far, I found it good, but I'm not sure whether I would pay for it myself, but then I'm very reluctant to pay for things generally.
She who wins the money.
But it's an investment in yourself as a writer, and it did work. I liked the way the site worked.
Wow, that sounds very interesting.
It's worth a look.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I looked at a couple. I looked at one called Figment. That's how it was listed. But then it became underlined.
Right.
All the sort of like branding and logos and so on were about underlined, which is part of Penguin Random House. Again, it seemed to have a more American flavour than British, but that's okay. We're fine with that. It seemed well designed and easy to navigate, and it offers an active board, apparently. Unfortunately, I don't know what an active board is, but that's just me.
It's what Stephanie was saying before, but message boards.
Yeah. Message boards.
I presume. Yes. Forums. They have forums or message boards.
Yeah. Right, okay. I looked and I thought, yes, it is. It's well designed and it's fairly easy to navigate. It seemed very much focused on reading, but there was a section that said write. It does give you quite a lot of writing prompts, writing advice, though not much in the way of skills. For some people that would be fine, others that's what they're looking for, and I don't think they'd get it on there. At first, when you sort of register, it asks you to do a profile and you can upload your photographs and talk about your hobbies and this, that and the other. A bit like you were saying about the other one, more social media. Mm-hmm. And that kind of put me off. But when I thought about it later, I thought, we're, you know, lucky enough to have a real life group, and we do know each other. We know each other's interests. Right. We know what they look like, and we know, you know, what ticks their boxes and all this kind of thing. So I suppose if you're not in the fortunate position of having that, then just to join a group that's sort of sterile and you're just sending things out into the ether and not knowing who's coming back at you, then that could be quite off-putting. So I suppose, in a sense, that's a way of creating. It is creating a community. Because it does ask you to list interests and so on. So presumably people end up grouping together and you can check off the things that you want to be kept up to date with. So that could be quite good for people who are stuck in limbo. The other one I looked at was NaNoWriMo. And I found, for me, I found that much more focused. And what was interesting, I thought, was that because of, obviously, I've missed November, but I don't think you need to be thinking, oh, I'm going to write a novel in November. Mm-hmm. I think you could just join this community for the helpful advice, because there is a ton of stuff.
There is. It's a few years since I've looked at it, but, you know, if you want to, you know, you need to research something for your novel, or, like, I don't know what kind of knife would an 18th century farmer be carrying? Somebody will tell you, or you know, they're very knowledgeable people on there with lots of you know.
And it was well laid out, so certainly you would be able to skim through and find things quite easily. Going back to what I said before when we were talking about critiquing, I thought Scribophile looked really interesting. That looked very promising as a group.
I like the idea that they have these books listed that you can can read about critiquing too. I have visited one called Now Novel, and it's another where you can post your writing and receive critiques from other writers. And I posted a part of my Mary Magdalene book, and I received first a critique from one of the administrators of the site, which was, I thought, very well done and fair. And then I received two more critiques from other members of the group. And they were, I thought, quite well done. I was happy and surprised to see that they'd actually read and paid attention and gave knowledgeable critiques. There's a subscription fee. But it also had loads of articles and things every, you know, that you can look back to and read about, you know, helpful things.
So plotting, it wasn't Kurt Vonnegut on there then? So.
No, it wasn't. Kurt Vonnegut wasn't there. I do remember the third review. He didn't seem to like it as much as the others, but he still gave me a very good score. So I don't know what you do with that. Yeah. But anyway, I appreciated that. And that's the only one I've ever posted anything to. So. Well, Nicola, the techiest member of our Write Club group, has just launched a site that you might be interested in looking at. It's called Writing Club World, and we're interviewing her. So listen up. Well, Nicola, which is a site for writers to post their work and get critiqued and offer critique to others. Tell us how it works.
Yeah, well, basically, we found a site last year, which we all got quite excited about, where you can actually post your work up and get critiqued. But the site seems to have been largely abandoned by its people who own it, and it hasn't been really looked after since about 2014. So that sort of led to a bit of disappointment, really. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool to start a new site, literally just for putting your work up and getting critiqued on? I just thought, let's make a new version of this. Let's make it up to date. Let's streamline it and just make sure that it's looked after and keeps current.
Well, how does it work?
How does it work? Well, you come along to writingclubworld.com and you put your name and email in, and then that's you registered, and then you upload your story. And so your story then goes into the list to be reviewed by other people. And then people give you reviews. They give you scores on things like character, plot, pace, background, world building, etc. And then they can also do a little sort of personal note to go with it. And then you review other people's stories. So the more reviews you do, the more reviews you get.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, how does it differ from these other sites that have been trying to do this sort of thing?
Well, I went to have a look at some of the other sites because I did a search, obviously, to see what the market was like. And I found a lot of the other sites were quite old-fashioned in the way they looked and felt. And they felt very overwhelming to me. You know, there was thousands and thousands and thousands of people doing lots of chit-chat about all sorts of things. And I just thought, I'm overwhelmed. I can't work out what to do. So I thought, if I just have a site that's just dedicated to peer reviews and keep it really streamlined, that might be better.
Okay, and what does it cost?
It's free. It's free to writers, and it's always going to be free to writers. So I'm funding the site myself at the moment, but eventually I hope to get some advertisers. And the goal is to get enough revenue coming in so that we can pay people to review at least the winner each month. You know, someone like a professional editor. So as soon as I can raise enough revenue from the site from advertising, I'll be paying professional writers to critique at least the winner every month, and hopefully the top three. I hope to get publishers interested, and I hope people will be looking at the top 10 list every time they come to visit the site.
Great.
Yeah, I decided to keep it really streamlined. Yeah.
Is it for any particular genre?
No, it's across the board on fiction writing only.
Fiction only. Okay. So short stories, novels.
Up to 5,000 words.
Up to 5,000 words of whatever.
And you can have up to three stories.
Have you had any interest yet?
It's very new. It went live just literally 2 days before Christmas. We've had nearly 100 people register. My biggest challenge at the moment is getting those registered people to upload a story and then to review, because obviously the system needs stories in it so that people can review them. And then it needs, you know, it needs people who've reviewed things. It goes around like that. So, you know, I would encourage you, if you come and register, do upload at least one story as quickly as possible.
How do I know if I put my work up there that someone else is not going to steal it?
Well, that is a problem with putting work in online, you know, generally, even if you put it on your own blog. But there is a simple way to prove that something is yours, which is to print off some of it and post it to yourself and not open it. Because then you've got a post-stamped version of your work that proves that you had it first.
Right. I've heard of doing that with other things.
The other thing is, obviously, with 5,000 words, you can't put up too much of your work. And I would encourage people not to. I would say, you know, put up two or three chapters to give people a good sense of what your work's about. People generally can't be, you know, they're not that bothered about doing that stuff.
Okay.
The other thing is that you have to be able to post one of your own stories to be able to review other people's work and get credits for your own story to be reviewed.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how it goes. In the meantime, there's been quite a lot of interest from what you're saying, huh?
Yeah, lots of people, lots of traffic. The traffic started coming within a day, so I got that right.
Yeah.
But like I say, lots of registered users. We're making it better all the time.
Go there and post a story.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
And bye.
Bye. See you soon.
And now it's almost time to end, but before we go, we're going to hear from Heather as to what's on her bedside table. Heather?
I've just finished The Children Act by Ian McEwan. This was recommended to me by Moira Neary, a friend of ours and listener to the podcast. I'm doing some research for a short story I want to write. This was recommended. Fiona May, a leading High Court judge renowned for her fierce intelligence and sensitivity, is called on to try an urgent case. For religious reasons, a 17-year-old boy is refusing the medical treatment that would save his life. Time is running out. I found it absolutely fascinating and really quite moving. And just because I'm researching it, you know, so that was why I read it. I think it's a generally good read.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you, Heather. Now we're going to hear from Lucy Honey as to what's on her bedside table. Lucy?
Hello, I'm Lucy Honey. I'm originally from the UK and I've been living in Germany for over 20 years. I've just finished reading The Girl Before by J.P. Delaney. I chose this book because, it had already been on my TBR, my really, really, really long TBR list. And my book swapping friend happened to lend it. The story is told alternately from the point of view of Emma, the girl before, then, and Jane now. Both young women are vulnerable, having been through difficult experiences. Both apply to live in a designer flat with the address at 1 Folgate Street, which seems to have a kind of become a character itself in the book. So the application process is complicated, involving answering very personal questions. And the tenancy has to be approved by the flat's architect, the very attractive Edward. So Emma was approved and moved in back then and lived there until something happened. Jane is approved and moves in now. Living in 1 Folgate Street involves following very strict rules on tidiness and minimalist living. Edward is obsessed about minimalist living and won't tolerate clutter. So we get to know Emma and Jane as the story unfolds. We find out who is lying and what happened then. They both become involved with Edward, and there are some twists and turns which are very well placed. I think they, you know, the writer places them just the right spot. So, yeah, the writer is a well-established author. It's a man who has written and published under other names. And this is his first book writing in female first point of view. And apparently he worked on this book for a decade. So there's hope for us yet. I think he pulled it off really well and created very plausible female characters. He also used his own experience as a parent grieving for their deceased child. I think it was done very well. Chapters are short, making it pacey and easy to read. And I would recommend this to any readers who, like me, enjoy domestic noir thrillers.
That's it for today. And now we're out of here like a herd of turtles, but we'll be back faster than green grass goes through a goose.
Bye!
Bye!